Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 174, self-publishing your game with guest Gabriel Landowski. So for all of you listeners new and longtime alike, you can probably tell by the title, we're in for a treat because not only is it me, but we get a special guest and we have one of my amazing co-hosts to join me today. Before I introduce who they are, I want to remind you of one thing, okay? So we talk about a lot of stuff on this show, and it's impossible to remember it all, right? A lot of you listen while you're painting models, you're assembling, you're driving to work, you're working out. We're gamers, we don't work out. But you're doing other things. And the point is, you can't be like, let me write down what they said about this. Let me do that. It doesn't happen. But you can remember one thing, and that is the link to the show notes where we have stuff we talk about, and we also have links to other things that we cover. So just remember this one thing, wargamingrecon.com/WR174. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR174. So let me bring in my buddy and co-host, Mike Payne. Mike, how are you today?
I'm good, Jonathan. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm very excited because I know we have a very special guest with us. Are you excited about him as well?
Yeah, sure. I don't get to see him all the time, so at least I can talk to him.
Well, it's actually because of you that we have him on the show. You said, hey, we should get Gabriel on. And I was like, okay, sounds good to me.
Yeah, he does it all, man.
I am very impressed with the stuff that I've seen that he's done. And instead of just talking about him, let's let him talk about himself. Gabriel, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Thanks.
I am so happy you're here with us. And I don't know about you, but around me here in Eastern Mass, we have snow coming down and I can look out the window and think, wow, I got a lot of shoveling to do.
Yeah, I look out the window and think about the shoveling I'm not going to do. So,
yeah, not today.
Oh, maybe I wish. Tomorrow.
I've got miniatures to work on. I can't be affording to be out there shoveling.
Oh, much more important.
Well, I like your priority.
See, I just want to pull out my Star Wars AT-AT and recreate the Battle of Hoth in my backyard. Hey, you're here because we want to talk about all of the many things that you do. You are an accomplished author. You're a game designer. You have this fantastic website, Tabletop Titans, and you served in the military. And geez, what don't you do?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, I mean, number one, there's absolutely nothing special about me other than the fact that we're all unique and special in our own ways. So I think that if you take the time to talk with anyone, I mean, you know, you do in the podcast and what Michael does with a lot of his miniatures and stuff, it's, you know, we're all unique in our own way. So when you put the flashlight on someone, obviously they kind of stand out a little bit, but I just like to kind of reiterate that because there's people out there for whatever reason that are discouraged from trying to do things. And like you were talking about earlier before we got on about doing podcasts, just do it. You know, don't worry about is this right or that okay or whatever. Just get in there and do something versus doing nothing.
Have fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I agree with you. And yet at the same time, unlike you, if I go to Amazon and I type in my name, there's no books that I've written that show up. And you have, I mean, I'm looking at me right now. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 books in here, I think.
Well, let me, yeah.
Nonfiction, well, sci-fi, fantasy. You've got a thing about mini gaming. And then you have all your rules that you've done. And you make me look like a slouch. So
No. So there's different ways. I mean, I think in the schoolroom, you know, we're used to being tested for stuff. So we're often worried about getting it right and doing it right. And you know, we do all these things behind the scenes and in the shadows, and then we show up for test day and we see what our score is. And if you were to look at my test history kind of growing up, I mean, I was probably a B+ student at best. I really don't like testing and those kinds of things. So when I began to get into the real world, the working world, where what I did mattered, I found that you didn't have to be the best or the brightest at something to begin with. It was a question of, once you did that first attempt, when you did your second attempt, you know, did you make improvements? Did you get better? And so on and so forth. So it's misleading to look at what's out there on Amazon, because that's just stuff that I've done. And I said, you know what, good enough. And I put it up there. Now, any professional, the professional side of me is like ripping its hair out, because it's like, it's not polished, it's not perfect, it's not whatever. But one thing I've learned, especially I'm an IT consultant for my normal job, you know, agile processes where it's just rapid iterations. What matters is how fast do you go through the learning process? And as long as you're getting incrementally better, you know, you can improve and stuff. So by no means do I claim to be an expert in anything, but if you were to read one of the first books I published, which was in itself an experiment just to see, well, how do I self-publish and let me give this thing a try, my Wargaming Rules, and then you read the, you know, the latest piece of fantasy fiction that I wrote. Yeah, you know, the latest piece of fantasy fiction may not be the best thing out there, but it's tons loads better than the first book I ever, you know, published. And that's kind of the point. I know that working, you know, the next book that's going to come out hopefully is going to be a little bit better than the last one. And if I get that goal, then I'm winning. So.
Yeah. Well, you get good by doing stuff, not by just doing nothing, you know?
Right. Right. Well, in experimenting, sure. Again, going about like, you know, agile, there's like lean methodologies and all this other stuff, but the crux of what makes those work is it's people experimenting with trying to do something and make it work. And then they just make sure they repeat the good stuff and they diminish the bad stuff. And then overall, you should get, you know, a faster, more efficient, you know, more excellent product when you're all said and done. So that works in writing. It works in painting, wargaming, and any number of things.
Yeah. So it's all laboratory.
The other day I was talking to a game designer who's also a podcaster, and he was saying from time to time, he gets asked what his favorite episode of his show is, or what the best episode of his show is. And he always says it's the one that just came out, or the one that's going to be coming out next. And he kind of surprised me about that, because I was like, really? Like, you can't look back and think, oh, you know, I did this one last year that was really, really good. Like, the interview was great, the topic was great, or we did a really fun game, there was something about it. And he said, well, listen, if you think about it, you're always getting better.
Right.
So that the thing you just did, or the thing that's coming out next, is the probably the best thing that you've done. And I kind of thought about it, and I was like, well, you know, in some ways I can agree with that, because I mean, I've been doing this for over 10 years. And if I were to look back at some of my earliest stuff or listen to it, I cringe, because I'm like, really? I put that out. I let people listen to that. And yet without it, I wouldn't be here with this episode with you guys. And so I can see that, like, you really do have to just kind of get stuck in.
Well, you had mentioned the tabletoptitans.com website. So that's just purely my hobby site. That's just, you know, my space on the internet where I kind of hang what, you know, I'm working on hobby wise. Once again, it kind of ties into this desire to publish and print something and create content and share it with people. So it's a different experience than like writing a book, where I attempted to kind of write something about wargaming and post some rules and stuff. This is more of, it's an easy, cheap one-off. It's, you know, full color. I can make corrections to it, get feedback from people. And, you know, the blog nature versus a book nature, it makes it more interesting, because then I'm interacting with people on a regular basis in the here and now, and I make them a part of what I'm doing. But the first website I had for gaming was one, you know, over the years I've been developing my own rules, meaning that if I like things about rules, I'll keep them or I'll incorporate them into what I'm doing. And you know, I've kind of borrowed and stolen from here and there and everywhere. And just to kind of have a name for it, I just referred to them as, you know, the Rules of the Damned Human Race, kind of an homage to Samuel Clemens' book of a similar title. But I figured that name was good enough to kind of encompass just about any aspect of gaming I might want to do, whether it's fantasy, sci-fi, you know, historical, whatever. But that let me kind of just group my rules together. So when people say, oh, these are great rules, what are they, or where'd you get them, or what rules were you using? I can just say, oh, well, here's the name for it. But I made a website called thedamnedhumanrace.com for a while and maintained that for a number of years. But if you were to look at that website, which I had just pulled it up the other day, an archived version, I was going to salvage some of my old tutorials and stuff off of it and dump them into the new Tabletop Titan site. Just looking at the difference between those two sites, like you say, it's so much better with what I've got now because it's a responsive design on the website. So if you look at it on your phone, it's more, you know, enjoyable and easy to access and read. So I wouldn't say it's my best stuff, but I would say that what you're interacting with now, it has the benefit of, you know, hindsight. I've done these little things here and there or modified stuff. And, you know, I think that's why people tend to look at what's coming out now versus what you've done before.
You mentioned this divergence of whether something ends up on your website, the hobby side of things, or the more professional side where you create a book and you release it. Why don't we talk a little bit about that process from how you start with, you have idea, right? And then you're like, I want to do something with this idea. Where do you go from that point? And then how do you make that decision?
Well, think of it as a capture, right? Does it make sense for me to put something into a book and put it out there for more of a posterity or a money-making point of view? Or is it something where it's more about sharing in the interaction? So conceivably, I could probably take every page off of the tabletoptitans.com website and put those in as a page and you know, create a book out of that. But just the interaction is different, you know, the scrolling nature of being able to scroll down the page and look at images or click on links and have it pop open windows. So I think part of it is that I've always wanted to write ever since I was a child. I was an artist before I was anything else in this world in terms of drawing on stuff. And there's something for me personally that's just very pleasing about black ink on white paper. I don't know what it is, but to this day, if I just think about like, you know, writing with like a black calligraphy pen and just drawing line on white paper, I get excited. Like I want to create something and I want to do something with that. So, you know, a page of a book, you know, books are magical things. They take you places. They engage your senses. I mean, they're the movie theater of your mind, and it's probably some of the best theater you've ever seen because you're able to fill in all the gaps. So you just have to make that decision that what am I really trying to do here? I wrote a book called Outer Demon, which was the latest fantasy fiction piece that I did because, you know, I enjoy doing Dungeons and Dragons and I'm usually the dungeon master and I like telling stories. But one thing I found is that the reason why I think I'm quote unquote so good at being a dungeon master is because I understand it's a relationship between me and the people I'm playing with. And I'm only half the story. They're the other half. So there's the challenge now when I'm writing a book, you know, by myself. How do I represent that other half of the creativity and the give and take? And, you know, how do I go through that process? So it's a different interaction with you as a reader where I'm trying to basically tell you an adventure tale and have you follow along. Whereas if I'm just trying to do something like I just did a tutorial on, you know, how do you make really easy, inexpensive terrain for your tabletop? Like, that's not something I want to stick in a book. I want to put it out there so that people like me who are doing Google searches for miniature terrain jungle will find it and be able to use it and act on it. So I think that's kind of the main thing is what's the nature of the interaction that you're looking for? What's the purpose of the interaction? And that kind of will start to tell you that, you know, this isn't really for a book. It's more for a website, or I've actually been thinking about doing a full-blown set of rules for the Damned Human Race. That's, you know, basically an 8x11 hardcover, full-color wargaming book, just because I've never done it before. And like you say, it's a challenge. Like, how do you start laying that out? So obviously there's, you know, tons of existing rule books, and you just kind of start looking through and say, okay, I kind of like how they did this. And I like how they did that. And just like I did with the rules, I just start taking elements of page layouts or, you know, the way they're doing their photography or how they set up their tables, you know, those kinds of things, and just try to get that into something that, you know, at the end of the day, I can say, okay, I did it. That's interesting. And what's the next thing I can start working on?
I like that jungle stuff that you did. I'm dying to do it myself. It came out great.
Yeah. And that's kind of the focus. I mean, there's tons of people out there. My first interaction with miniatures and models was with my father. He's a hobby railroad guy. And I loved it until I got to the point where I realized it never really changes. The terrain kind of just stays the way it is. If anything, it starts to get dusty and cobwebby. And if you really want to do anything major with the table, you got to tear it apart. And, you know, there's a lot of brittle trees and stuff that you can get away with on a railroad table. But, you know, if you're doing a miniature gaming table, there's a lot of that stuff that just will not survive contact with your average war gamer. So it's the challenge of how can we make terrain, or how can I sculpt these miniature pieces of art, which is basically what I consider wargaming terrain and pieces to be, but make them survivable. You know, how can I make it look like, wow, this belongs on a shelf or in a museum, yet, you know, I'm not cringing every time a 12-year-old picks it up and starts moving around the table, so I can just focus on playing the game, which is what it's supposed to be about.
Yeah, I don't worry about that anymore. My buddy Jim Carroll told me that just think of it as battle damage. And so I don't care if anything gets broken.
Right, yeah. I've got a sick call shelf where people, you know, if people in items, as they get damaged, they kind of just start to queue up. And when that shelf gets full, then I'll sit down one afternoon and just start patch repairing people.
Yeah, I'd rather make something new, though. Screw that, you know?
Yep.
I mean, I guess if I got nothing to do, I'll do it.
A while back, I had Wargaming author Henry Hyde on the show, who wrote the Wargaming Compendium.
Yeah.
I want to get that.
First of all, great book. Buy it digitally just because it's hefty. It's expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
It's $60 American, $35.
Yeah, I like having it in a book, though. It's, you know, if you like it.
He did the thing you're talking about working on, Gabriel. The full collar, you know, the whole big kit and caboodle, hardcover. But one thing that he discussed when he was working on this, because I talked to him actually several times while he was working on this tome, as he refers to it, and it is, I mean, like, if someone broke into my house, I'll pick this up instead of a bat and whack right. him over the head, and then I'll go back to playing my game. But one thing that he had talked about, and I don't know if this is something that afflicts you, it definitely afflicts me, which is why I transitioned to doing a podcast instead of writing, because I come from a background of writing and short stories and newspapers and stuff like that, is that we are both very wordy,
right?
And we like to talk is part of the problem. And so when he wrote this originally, it was bigger. It was like a lot bigger. And of course, that brings the issue of editing up. And not just for did you make a mistake? Does it make sense? But I had this teacher in high school, my journalism teacher, who always said, you need to write tight. And that was something I never did, and probably makes me a bad writer and maybe a bad whatever. But for that editing process, like, Henry's book was significantly longer, and he ended up having to condense, and he ended up having to make an extra chapter, it turned out. But when you write for your stuff, like, do you plan in advance, like, you're just going to write, you see what you get, and if there's overage, great, and you cut? Or do you figure, like, some New York Times bestselling authors, right? And I know it's a different type of writing, but some will be like, I'm commissioned, or I intend to write a book that's going to be 10,000 words. I will write 10,000 words, even if it means putting like the word "the" at the end of a sentence. What is your process for this?
Well, I go back to what's the purpose of why am I writing? You know, in kind of the benefit, and this is why I encourage everyone to always experiment. You just never know. I mean, you can ask advice and people can tell you, but until you do it yourself, you just never really know until you do it. Having written a book on miniature wargaming, it started out where I just started talking about it like I'm talking to you guys. I wasn't worried about being all professional. I figured I wanted it more friendly in the tone, and I wanted people to be like, oh, okay, it's like this guy's talking to me and we're having a conversation at a coffee shop. So if there's, you know, better ways to have worded a sentence or whatever, yeah, I mean, the spelling and whatnot, you want to try to get that as clean as possible. And the disease of writing and self-publishing is that you will not see glaring mistakes until you've got them in print, and it's a month later, and then you're like, oh God, page 56, you know, I misspelled the word "the." But you stare at those mistakes all the time and you just don't see them. So, you know, it really is a group effort of having friends who are willing to look through it. You know, my mother-in-law is a great one for going through and just kind of catching little things like that, that just for whatever reason, my brain's worried more about what I'm trying to tell you versus, you know, I've switched the H and the T on the word "the." But laying out everything. Yeah, well, and then laying out a book, I mean, you know, if it's for miniature wargaming, it's more about reference, or is it a joy read? You know, so if it's a joy read, then it's me telling you a tale and however I want to go through telling the tale. If it's something where you're going to actually be using it to try to play a game, then it's more about organizing things in a way that makes it easy for people to find what it is that they need to look for. You know, it's playing, what was it, Maneuver. It's a great, simple tabletop board game by GMT Games. And it's just a little set of rules. I mean, it's not even 16 pages front and back. half a sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. But it is so frustrating because there's no real good indexing, and you have to kind of go back through and start reading through paragraphs to find, okay, this is the rule for this situation. So just little things like that.
Try to find the rule for the situation in my rules.
But say again?
I said, try to find the rule for the situation in my rules.
Yeah, well, you are the rule book, Mike, and that's kind of why it's fun to, if not playing your games, be around your games just to kind of watch how you propagate that. But that's the challenge, too. I think that having done a lot of convention games as a game master, and people say, oh, that was great, I had a good time, and not perfect. I've had people certainly give me lots of you know, critical feedback, which is appreciated.
Oh, that's good, though, yeah.
But the challenge I find is that, yeah, the rules seem to work good, and people seem to have fun when I'm around. So what happens when I'm not there and I just put these inanimate objects or aids out there and they start trying to use them and figure out the game on their own? Are they able to do it? Is it frustrating? So on and so forth. So it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, I noticed that you didn't have any problem taking over my game, and I was happy to let you do it. It went great.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, and this is part of my disease as a game designer.
It's a great disease to have.
Well, it's sometimes yes, sometimes no. But I tend to find that I like to be a game master more than I like to play in games, because the second I start seeing something in a game I'm playing where the gameplay is slowing down and you can tell people are starting to get a little bored or a little antsy, or something just seems like a mechanic's not working, you know, you're kind of like the passenger in the car. You can see that car accident about to happen, but you're not behind the wheel. You can do nothing to stop it. You just kind of got to go along for the ride and see what happens. And I'm just the kind of person, whether, you know, A-type personality or, I mean, you know, military background, and one of the first things you learn is you can't control fate, but you have more control over what happens to you if you're the one who's actively driving what's going on to some degree. So I tend to gravitate towards being the game master more than being a player.
Yeah, I love the way you drew all those people in that didn't want to play, all those wallflowers.
Yeah, well, that's
standing public around looking at the table, and then you probably playing. That was terrific.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like anything else. They don't really understand what it is, so they're very hesitant to get involved. And the second you can passively trick them into participating, they get a comfort level, and then they don't realize that they're playing, even though they still think they're just standing beside the table watching people play. But the next thing you know, you've asked them, well, where do you think this unit should go? What do you think I should do? Or, hey, would you mind rolling these dice for me? And they've been doing it for the last 5 rounds. Well, guess what? You've been wargaming.
Yeah, I loved
you're
it.
A veteran.
That was a blast. I had so much fun with that.
Yeah, I think we looped in like 3 people that one day. That was down at Fort Devens at the museum. That was a fun little excursion.
Yeah, at least 3 people. I think more than that.
Yeah.
Because you had that big gang of kids that came.
Well, they showed up to play, but the adults were the ones that we had to kind of, which was kind of funny. So they were like, oh, I'll just watch. I'm like, uh-huh, sure. Okay, I got you. So, you know, 3 rolls later.
I was the same way. Peter Mancini dragged me into a game. I just wanted to watch. And I've been playing ever since. I'm more than grateful to the guy. He just got me involved in everything that I've been doing these last many years. That's how you get people into the hobby.
Well, they're good at it. I mean, overall, I really enjoy the hobby as a whole, but I've rarely had a truly negative experience. But for new players, I mean, so Maine Historical Wargaming Association, fantastic club. And this is me after, you know, going on 20 years of actively gaming with other people. But I've been all over the Northeast and the South and a lot of different groups. And Bob Kane, who's a friend of mine from the Colonial Wargaming Group on Yahoo, was a part of that club back when I lived in North Jersey. So when I ended up moving to New Hampshire, it's like, hey, I can now come visit you guys. And I'm glad I did, because they're just a fantastic group of people who I think, you know, they really understand that it's about keeping the hobby healthy as well as, you know, having gameplay. And
I love what those guys do.
Yeah, and they're starting a program, or we're starting a program. It's a cadets program. So the idea is that we're trying to make kid-friendly games, and we're championing, you know, we're still kicking around ideas like I talked about. It's all about the experimentation. But like putting together little packets, you know, so where kids show up, that not only do they play a Napoleonic's game, but when they leave, they take a little box of figures and rules and stuff with them home. And that's kind of the point, I think. So if you get into games where people aren't really letting you play your pieces, or I was in a big, huge Napoleonics game with a, we'll just say a popular author of Napoleonics rules who was in North Jersey. And I was taking pictures because it was a great table and it was my first time kind of playing with that group, and I'm taking pictures. And all of a sudden I realized it's like it'd been three rounds and I still hadn't done anything with my figures. And I said, was I supposed to go? And they kind of looked at me like, well, you were busy taking pictures. And I was like, oh, come on, guys. Like, I'm new. Like, you know, so I was kind of turned off by that. But
yeah,
I don't want that experience for people. So when they show up and they're standing there, and you, I mean, let's face it, if they stop walking and they're looking at what you're doing, they're interested. Try to figure out how to loop them in.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I do it the way I do it. I don't want to wait around for people to take their turns if I'm going to have a lot of people in the game. I want to keep them moving. So
right.
You know, I don't really care if it's chaos as long as everybody's engaged. Right. One of the best things that was ever said to me, at least made me feel pretty good, was Matt Murphy told me that his kid Brady was playing the Mike Payne game at home. You know, he didn't need no rule book or nothing. He's just playing.
I
need more boxes and barrels, Dad. Hey, one thing I wanted to ask you about, Gabriel, when you started talking about your, you know, your first being an artist, is your comic books, your comic strip.
Yeah.
I think that thing's, I haven't seen it lately, but every once in a while it pops up on my screen. I think it's a riot.
Yeah, Shmoo is my wife's cat's name. He's a character. It's largely based on him. But that's just something where I wanted to take a love of drawing and a desire to make a cartoon or a strip, which is something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, kind of have that be something that between us, like she'll send me pictures of like weird scenarios where he's doing things and I'll try to figure out, well, how can I turn that into a strip? So it's number one, a way for me to fulfill on hobby desire. But at the same time, it lets my wife and, you know, the fur baby that we live with be a part of what I'm doing. She's pretty good about role playing and stuff, but she's definitely not into tabletop. So you can imagine I'm sitting here like our coffee table is half covered with Death Knights right now being painted. And, you know, so I'm always kind of going off into my la-la land with miniature gaming, and she's kind of there. She's a video gamer, so we kind of work out that way. But anything I can do to kind of draw, you know, her into what I'm doing, I always try to figure out how to make that happen.
What about Shmoo? Does he get up there on the war game table or what?
Yeah, actually, it was the rule of cat, right? I think I've heard it enough different places where if the cat comes on the table, you're not allowed to do anything to shoo it away or modify its behavior. And if it walks across the table and knocks over a unit, that unit's destroyed. Or if it lays down on the ground, it's considered terrain and, you know, all sorts of interesting rules. I know he at one point jumped up on a table and got caught up in my micro armor because I still can't find the turret to one of my Panther tanks. So I know that somehow got caught in his long hair and he's carried it somewhere else. So
nice. You gotta love cats.
Yeah, but shmood.com, shmood.com is the website for that, and then there's a Facebook page for it. So same thing. I mean, I'm experimenting. If you go back to the first strip and look at the latest one, it looks like two different artists were drawing them, but it's because I'm starting to figure out my rhythm. One of the fellow gamers, Michelle, from the Maine Historical Wargaming Association, made a suggestion for a strip, and I love that kind of stuff. Like, you know, it's like the D&D thing. Give me something to work with and I'll do my half of it and then, you know, put it back out there for you to interact with.
Right, yeah. People give me ideas for my game all the time. It's great.
Yeah, we're going to do a Mike Payne Hang High chapter and when I do my Wargaming Compendium.
Oh, you are.
Lots of pictures.
Well, then you're going to have to run the damn human race on the table at least once.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I'll have to do that sometime. Rich Wallace has a cat that goes into his gaming table because Rich always has a table set up. And it grabs a unit and takes off with it. I don't know how many of those things are around the house. But
see, I was going to say, I don't have that problem because I don't have cats. But I get bunnies, so they don't do it. But kids, I mean, the kids, geez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I'm used to that because I like kids play, you know?
Right.
You know, even yours is a little young, but we could give her a shot.
Yeah, you're talking, Jonathan, about kids. I mean, I remember there was a little girl who would show up and she was probably 7 at the time. And by the time she was 9, she had started painting with daddy. So whenever he was working on something, he would give her some figures to work on. And then lo and behold, I mean, by the time she was 11, she, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, she could base paint a figure easily up to a quality of a 7. And if you were to pay her a dollar a figure, she could get you to level 7. And then, you know, people like me can just add a little bit of more detail, maybe push it up to an 8, you know, with an ink wash and whatnot. And here she's like 11 years old getting paid $100 to paint 100 figures. And she thinks it's great. And here I'm on the other side going, man, I'm only paying a dollar per painted figure. This is fantastic. So, you know, it was a match made in heaven.
Yeah, I guess. Wow, that's awesome.
Well, that's what you want. You want something where it's mutually beneficial for everyone. So whether it's a kid learning to paint and you're giving them a little something to go, or whether it's, you know, you coming up with your set of rules or something, or publishing something, you want right, to just right. kind of work out for everyone.
Well, you know, I have some kids that started when they were really young, and now they're running games.
Right. Well, and that's the point, I mean, right?
That's cool. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The evolution. I mean, people talk about the graying of the hobby, and you know, we have there's kids that come down. I believe it's from Brunswick that come down to Bath, Maine, and plan our game days and stuff. And we sponsor them to we give them some money to pay for gas and whatnot to get them down and back and forth. Cool. I think the challenge is a lot of people when you start talking about tabletop or miniature wargaming, obviously within a certain age group, it's like, oh, Warhammer 40K or all this other stuff versus historicals. And it's like, well, you know, let's not be book snobs. Let's not be miniature snobs. Let's just acknowledge that if that's something that they're passionate about, that grabs their imagination and so on, then let's play on that. So I've actually had rules where, I mean, the Dan Human Race is nice because the rules work well for sci-fi or for Napoleonics. So if you just switch out the figures with Napoleonics figures, guess what? You're playing Napoleonics. I mean, the genre only dictates what's my maneuver, what's my armor, what's my firepower. And going back to my military experience, that's what you do every time you take over a unit. You figure out what your capabilities are, and then you figure out, well, what tactics do I need to employ to be successful with this set of capabilities? And that's what it's all about. So,
yeah, Bill Greenwald said something one time. He came over to Rich Wallace's to play Carnage and Glory. He'd never played. He says, well, I understand the time period and I understand the tactics, so it shouldn't be such a big deal to learn how to play the game. And it wasn't.
Right.
He did pretty damn good. You know, it's really, you know, you need rules, but if you have a general idea of how to play, you're going to do all right.
Right. Guidelines. Now, Jonathan, you said you were going to do some kind of rules or something, or run the game or something at Huzzah?
Maybe.
No, come on.
Come on.
No, so really. Oh.
Well, you got a lot to do with Huzzah, so maybe not.
And see, and I know I shouldn't, but I keep on getting intimidated by Huzzah because I love Huzzah. I love
guys,
that HWA. But
they are the best guys. They don't care what you do. Just do
I know,
it.
But all the tables look fantastic, and everyone is.
What happened to that just do it thing we were talking about?
Yeah.
See, that's one of those cases where it's easier when I'm sitting here talking into a microphone. do you want to know what it is? Because I'm going to throw someone under the bus.
And
so this is what it is, okay? And I know he's going to listen, and even if he doesn't, I'm going to tell him anyway, and he's going to say some things I'm not allowed to say because we're a family-friendly podcast. But what it is this. Okay. So for TotalCon, which is coming up in February.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That's always fun.
My buddy and another co-host of the show, Adrian Benson, and I, really more him than me, but he and I are going to be running a game of bolt action.
And oh, okay.
I've never played in bolt action before. I honestly don't know a whole lot about it. And really, I don't have to do a whole lot with it because we have this, I've talked about it on older episode of the podcast where we have this nice division of labor, okay? and that's what it comes. You want to play to everyone's strengths, right? Mutually beneficial.
Uh-huh.
So
you come up with the ideas and he does all the work. Is that how it works?
So what it is I have these great connections with the people who run the convention, and so I handle all the PR for it. I promote I work with the convention to make sure that we get primo space, that we get the time we want, that all the things work out. And this is going to make me sound like a snob because I don't mean to be a snob, but basically if they see my name attached, okay, Mike, I'm going to use you as an example. If they see your name attached, they know your thing's a quality event, and it is. So therefore they give you preference over, like if you and I put our names in for the same time period and they only have a slot for one guy, and they're like, we don't know this Jonathan guy, but this Mike Payne, he's awesome. They give you the event and they say, Jonathan.
Come on.
No, they do.
So this is what we're going to do. So for Huzzah, what's going to happen is, so I'm actually working with a company, a sole proprietorship called Things from the Basement. And the owner, George, and
Oh,
his
yeah, I got one of
wonderful
them
wife
models.
and daughter, they were at Hazal last year, and he does laser cutting type terrain pieces. And I love the idea that it was like that family startup. You could see that energy and the excitement of that they had being there. And so I made sure when I set up, I actually didn't put any games in the Huzzah directory, but there were some kids that had played in games previous, and I said, "Well, I'll bring my stuff up, and if I get a chance or a need, I'll have stuff I can just throw a game on." So when I did my impromptu games, I would actually set it up in front of their table because I could see that George definitely wanted to, he was into the gaming idea, and we actually coerced his daughter into playing, and we actually got her to play. I think it was an aerodrome competition there later on. We needed another pilot, so we went and hijacked her and threw her, and she ended up shooting people down. And you never saw a happier set of parents in your life.
Good job. It's hard to get girls to play.
But what we'll do, Jonathan, is that I've already said that we're going to do. I'm doing a game that's sponsored by them, so I'm using the simplified convention form of the Damned Human Race rules. It'll be right in front of George's table there. We'll probably have two tables set up. And the way we can backdoor this so you feel no pressure is that you'll simply monitor and kind of be like the Johnny on the spot for one table while I'm running on the other table, and on the other side of me is Mike's setup. So we're all still like, that squad integrity where we're together, but we still have our own areas of responsibility. So you can run a game, feel comfortable like you're not out there all by yourself, but at the same time, have no fear that, the weight of the world is on your shoulders. Because if you crawl under the table into a ball and just start weeping, then we'll put a blanket on you, and we'll just, finish running the game. But I
We'll
think
keep
you'll
the
be
camp
fine.
going. That's
You should just
right.
point and laugh at me and be like, "Hey, that's one thing you should
It's
do."
a classic case. The only thing you have to fear is fear itself. My bottom line is I the way I think of it is I'm the host. I'm the one who's hosting the event. And I've had people who've said, "Well, I don't really like how that works or whatever." And I say, "Hey, I completely respect that." And I said, "And if it bothers you so much that you really don't want to play, no worries."
Yeah,
But
hey, I've had
one
people walk
time,
away from my game.
yeah,
Yeah,
well, one
just
time,
wasn't
one
their
time
style.
ever, I had to say to a guy, "Look, I understand what you're saying, but at this point, as the host of this, I'm going to have to ask you either to buy in or just, we'll take a rain check and maybe play a game later, and you can show me how you'd like it to be done." But ultimately, I had to just kind of put the kibosh to him because he was just ruining it for everyone else, and there's no need for that. But
Yeah, I've had to do
fortunately,
that a couple of times myself.
yeah.
But, and it's just something that happens. Everybody doesn't like the same things. That's what's great about this hobby. You don't have to.
So you do it, right, Jonathan?
You
You're
know,
gonna run a table?
well, what my plan is this, because the obstacle isn't me.
That's not what I
It
heard.
sounds like
That's not what I heard. Did you just hear
no.
that, Mike? That's not what I heard.
Yeah, I
It
heard it,
completely
but I'm not
sounds like
buying it.
no. The obstacle is Adrian. Okay, so Adrian, since we've never run a bolt action game before here, he's played in it once or twice, and since I've never played in one, the obstacle is he wants to. And I'm probably not supposed to say this publicly, but I don't care. He wants, because it's my
Oh,
show. So he wants to wait and see how it goes at TotalCon before committing to
no.
anything else.
Well, that's why I'm saying you can show up and you can basically run a parallel game of Damned Human Race next to my table. So that way you don't have to worry about the rules. If you get stuck, you just like look over at me and I can say, "Oh, just this," and you'd be okay. And then you'll get the gist of it. I mean, the good thing about a good set of rules is in the first 20 minutes, if they get it, then it's probably a good set of rules. So.
And bolt action is not that bad. I've played a few times, and I'm probably going to play again if I ever get my stuff all painted with my stuff, But when I run a game, I'm not going to run bolt action, but I'll play it.
See, I've been trying to wear him down, and so I'm waiting for him to finally say, "Do you know what? I'm fed up with you bugging me about this, and we're gonna do it." But I think the thing is, we're not gonna make it for this year. So I think 2018 is my
Well,
hope.
you
That will
guys
be my
might be
plan.
able to do it because TotalCon is not that far away, and there's enough time between TotalCon and Huzzah to talk Adrian into doing it,
That's what
or Adrian,
I got
or
to
for
see when
Adrian
that
to talk
cutoff
you into
is,
doing it.
because I still have to. Huzzah is an interesting event, and I'm glad we're talking about it actually. So Huzzah for me is very interesting because there's been some discussion online lately. There's a guy, and of course I can't remember his name, which makes me awful because if I had planned
Oh.
this, I would have had it. But there's a guy in Texas. He's coming up with his wife. He wants to go to Huzzah. He's very excited. They're excited about this. They've never been to Maine. They think Maine sounds delightful. And I've been telling him all these wonderful things about Portland and how beautiful it is, and so forth, and saying how it's a family vacation is what it's become. Because Huzzah really is a family-friendly event, like you were mentioning, Gabriel, with the whole cadet program and everything.
Right. So,
yeah. I never leave the hotel.
What happens for me is it actually started the first year I went to Huzzah. Well, I went with my wife, and it was the weekend of our one-year wedding anniversary. And somewhere or other, she agreed to go. Don't know why, how, but she did.
Yeah.
So it's become a tradition. And so now we go with the little one, and the compromise that makes it mutually beneficial for my family and for me, so that the Wargamer side of me gets to go do stuff and the Wargamer dad side of me gets to live a happy life, nice. Is that I divide the time in half, roughly. So I get to play in basically two games. I get to run my show, because that's part of one of the things I do. I got to actually submit an event listing for the show, which will be the Sunday morning of the convention, because that's when I like to do it. And that'll get it. And then the rest of the time is with my family. So like we do our meals, we do whatever. So that means I have like no time at Huzzah. I have enough time to go and get a flavor of stuff, but not enough time to really pledge myself fully to also.
Right. And that's why I'm setting you up for success. See, Mike, what I'm doing, I'm like roping
or something.
I'm providing the rules. I'm providing
the table. Before. You're a master.
I'm providing the terrain and the figures. And you could even just show up for 10 minutes and run the table. That way you can kind of like, you know, get your wings.
Just to get some credit.
Yeah.
You know, get your credit in the
get
book.
Get some street cred. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I got actually, I got in my basement, which stuff now looks like crap, but I was actually hoping to wear Adrian down on for us to run muskets and tomahawks. We have 54 millimeter armies and plastic stuff that got painted up, and we have terrain for. We ran a Total Con 3 years ago. And of course, the armies and plastic stuff is that soft plastic. And so the paint doesn't stick. So the like we're literally at the con putting the stuff out and the paint's flanking off that I put on.
Always so a challenge.
It looks like crap. I got it in my basement, but like I could just pull that anyway. So my hope is to, in the near future, run or co-run an event at Huzzah, just because of the time crunch is really what it is. Because I make sure that I do as much other things that I don't normally get to do. So I use Huzzah really for me to say, okay, here's something someone local's published I need to look at. Or here's a set of rules that I've never looked at before that people keep on telling me, why don't you cover it on your show? Do you hate this? I got to read the email or the comment and be like, no, I'm sorry. It's just... but I'll add it to my list because I get a list and do. And then like Total Con is the one where I spend the weekend. It's me. My family stays home and I get to do whatever. And so then I go like at Total Con, I'm going to be interviewed for a documentary. So never be able to happen at Huzzah just as the time. And I'm not complaining. It's a great way to make it a family friendly event and go and have a vacation. And I think Rich Clayton does something like this. And I know quite a few others, they go and so they divide it up and that's just how it goes, but it requires a lot of planning in advance for such a
thing. Well, the invitation will forever be out there that should you come to a game day or whatever, you can be the assistant game host and then maybe step up into the limelight and run things like I subversed of control from Mike there when we were down at Devin's, where he was able to step away from the table and let me kind of get in there until I passed the baton back to him. So
yeah, I went and got a coffee and a pizza. I had it made.
I will add it to my list.
Yep, and you're always invited to do whatever you want at Hangai too. That's always
available. Yeah, one of these days I'm going to run a full blown game on your table. Maybe we'll do that. Huzzah, Mike. I'll just do alt control like an hour, 2 hour session on your table.
All right, we'll just have to figure out, you know, what session you want to do it so I can work all my other stuff in.
Sure,
you can put one large table, just kind of. Multi-table event,
right? Or I just put my table on the end of where you normally have your Chinese palace, so it's like if you're looking beyond the palace, there's this, you know, continuation. We can have like the 40-foot gaming table.
Oh wow, that sounds really good.
So Gabriel, what kind of advice would you have? Some do's and don'ts for people who kind of want to create their own set of rules and then put them out for the world, whether they want to do self-publishing or traditional publishing or just put online, like what would you, let's pretend I'm doing this.
Sure.
What would you tell me to, from your experience that has worked really well for you or that just was a disaster and you're like, whatever you do, do not do this.
Well, first and foremost, nothing is perfect. Even if you get the quote unquote perfect set of rules out there, the context that the person is coming to you from will change whether or not the rules will work for them. So if you're brigade level mindset, my skirmish rules aren't going to work for you. Number one, don't be afraid to have people say unpleasant things or tell you, well, no, you shouldn't do that. You should do this. Number one, first and foremost, I'm doing this for me. I enjoy playing the rules. I like doing whatever. And like Mike says, if it's not your thing, that's cool. Don't sit there and hate on me, you know, the entire time. But
do what you like to do.
Yeah. I mean, some people made some suggestions and I've tried them and I ultimately kind of go back to what works for me. So it's all about experimenting, number one. Format wise, in terms of recording these things, because people, you know, have visions of, well, I'll sell my rules or I'll make a business out of this. The best thing I can say is that's great if you can get some coinage. I mean, I think I've all said and told I've made about maybe $2,500 off everything I've ever published since 2008. But it was never for that purpose. Like, I'm a failure in terms of looking at it from the point of view of compensation. I'm just not getting the dollar value return on my investment. But that's not why I do it. So the money's kind of nice. I mean, like, I'll get a $4.16 check from someone buying an ebook every once in a while. And I turn that right around and I'll use that to get some terrain with, you know, a little bit of money from like the hobby store, or it'll help pay for domain registration or something. So, I mean, it serves a purpose, but it's not why you're doing it. And that takes a lot of the stress off. I would definitely say if you can do something where you have like a single web page somewhere where you can post your rules up, it's a great way to make it a community interactive type event, or even have a Google Doc of them. And then as people make suggestions or as you change stuff, people, when they go to that URL, they're getting the latest version of the rules. They don't have to worry if they've got the latest version or not. What that does is it keeps it very fluid. It lets you kind of record, you know, the things that you like or don't like. I mean, one of the things that I've learned about my rules, if I ever go back and do the full-blown compendium style rule book, is that it's all going to be like a sushi or a Chinese menu, where there's the core rules of this is what you absolutely have to do to just be able to do anything with the game. But everything after that's optional. Where do you want to do, you know, leadership modifiers? Do you want to do supply considerations? Do you want to do optional equipment and blah, blah, blah? You know, you can make it as advanced squatter leaderish as you want by all the optional rules that you opt in. So trying to make it something that people could respond to in a modular fashion or as components and just use the pieces that they want to play with. Because, you know, when I play in conventions, it's as stripped down as can be. I mean, it has to be if I'm running eight people on the table at the same time and I've got, you know, 10-year-olds fighting against 43-year-olds. You have to kind of keep the action going and the story going, so you can't get too detailed. Yeah. But if it was something like Mike and I were, you know, playing on the side and it's our monthly or biweekly gaming session and we usually spend 6 hours or 8 hours doing it, yeah, maybe we're keeping track of every individual person who's taken casualties and, okay, that guy's at a -3 and blah, blah, blah. It's just a question of time and convenience. So
yeah, it's a whole different world.
Yeah, keep it flexible. Be open to new feedback. Don't be afraid to say, hey, it's a great idea, but I don't think I'm going to end up implementing it just for whatever reason. You know, do it for you. And then hopefully if you're doing it for the right reasons, it'll spread to the people around you. And you know, I think the time and time again, for the most part, I usually get positive or very positive reviews for just the simplicity and ease of learning how to play. I mean, I always feel good when about 30 minutes in, I'm stepping back and you can see that there's one or two or three people at the table that are getting the mechanics and they're running the game. They may turn to me every once in a while for a ruling or a decision or a clarification, but you know, after an hour and a half, when I haven't said word one for the last 40 minutes, that's a win in my book. So
yeah, that's when you know you're on the right track, when you get something like that going.
Right.
That's kind of like the podcast. I always tell people they can hear me anytime, but when I got a co-host like Mike on, or I got a guest like you, Gabriel, on, people don't want to hear me. If I'm doing most of the talking, I'm doing my job wrong. Right. I should be talking not at all. I should be like, hi, I'm so-and-so. And then it should be like 40 minutes later, thanks for listening. Same thing as running a game. It should be like, hi, here's the game. You're in the right spot. This is basically how we play. Get questions asked. Go at it.
Yeah, it's well, the 10 foot rule, as we used to call it in the military, that if you were a leadership, like if you were a squad leader or getting up in the enlisted ranks, when you're teaching or training or doing whatever, we'd make this rule that you cannot come within 10 feet of the subject matter which is being taught. So the idea is that it's a different way. Like if I can kneel down next to you and do it for you, and while you're working on something, I'm putting my hands on and I'm interjecting, you have a tendency to start backing off, letting me do what I need to do, and then coming back in. If I stand 10 feet away, you have to do everything. So it forces me to, you know, same thing with wargaming. It forces me to think, okay, how can I explain things from a distance and have them understand what I'm saying? Which, if you think about it, it's taking a step in the direction of, well, Gabriel's no longer standing here, but all you have is a set of rules that you're now looking at. So it trains me to think of, well, how do I explain things? How do I say things? The compendium you showed, you know, based on the cover, I'm thinking, oh, okay, that better be chock full of images and pictures. But if I start opening that book and I start seeing a majority of text, I probably wouldn't buy it, because I'm all about showing people how to do something with the, you know, like I love all the bolt action books and stuff just to flip through them. But you know, if it's something like Advanced Squad Leader, I mean, I enjoy the mechanics of what they do with, you know, D6s and the intricacies of what they can do, but I don't go flipping through the Advanced Squad Leader binder that's 4 inches thick for the view of what's inside. I always flip through these bolt action books just to look at the pictures, you know, and that's the level of engagement. So I love, you know, ASL in terms of, I love the mechanics. I don't like to play it, you know, but I never go flipping through the rules just to look at the pages. So if I can start thinking about that, how do I put this book in front of you and Mike and stand back and say nothing for a 4-hour period and watch you go through the process of trying to figure out how to play the game, then maybe I can incorporate that in my agile iteration process and think, okay, you know what, if I explain it like this, they seem to get it sooner or faster. Or if I just put this diagram out here, I don't have to put 3 paragraphs worth of text. They see the picture, they get it, we move on to the next thing.
Yeah, so less is definitely more.
Yeah.
You know, I used to run a Gettysburg game with my buddy Kenny Robinson. He printed up a set of rules on one sheet, 2 sides, and after 2 turns, we could go have lunch if we wanted to.
Right.
You know, and that, especially for a convention. Like you said, if it's got more depth to it, that's something that we're playing like every Wednesday night or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Just got to keep it simple, especially at a con. And everybody has fun, or they go do something else if it's not fun.
Well, it's like we equate it to drug dealing, right? Here, let me give you a taste. Let me give you an easy taste, and you like it. You want to come back for more. Yeah. Oh, you want to do, okay, you know what? Why don't we go ahead and put in resupply and medics? And then next time they come back, okay, let's introduce armored vehicles. And you're just like, okay, you know, and they're ready for their next addiction hit. So,
and the nice thing, I think the really nice thing about that is we're not trying to make a profit.
Right, right.
You know, our profit is having fun.
Yeah. Well, you can tell motivations. If someone's there for the profit versus someone's there for you know, the joy of it. And that's like George, it's a business he's doing, you know, Things from the Basement is his business. But I think the reason why I gravitated towards him and his family is because they're there for the joy of it, and they happen to be making money versus the other way around. So it's something where, you know, when you, I'll have kids that come up to me and they're like, hey, are you doing your space thing again this year? And I was like, I hadn't put anything in the huzzah directory that I was going to play. But I was like, well, what time are you free? And he's like, well, you know, how about Sunday at 1 o'clock? He's like, okay. So he showed up with his dad and we set up the whole table and you know, they had at it. And that's what it's about. So
that's great.
It's just one of those things where I've seen a lot of kindness and goodness go on. Like I said, the Bob Kanes and the Mike Paynes and tons of other people I could sit here and mention probably for the next 5 minutes. Our job is more mature, seasoned war gamers, is not to be the curmudgeons that are poo-pooing everything that's going on. Our job is to do everything we can to promote the passion, the excitement. And if it's, you know what, you hate 40K so much, well, then try to find a way to interact with the younger generations where you're playing with their pieces, but maybe using a slightly different set of rules where you can meet halfway. Because it makes no sense to have kids show up at like a wargaming day and then to have a game filled up with all these, you know, friends who have been friends for 20 years and they're all experienced war gamers and they won't let a kid in. It just, to me, there's a time and place for everything. I agree.
Right. Well, there's a place for curmudgeons too, because those guys get together
at home in their basement.
They're doing what they want to do. So that's great. You know, they're having a ball. That's what they want to do.
Yeah. Well, that's and we were successful. I mean, we had two of the teenagers that came down. I keep forgetting where, I think it's New Brunswick. I forget where, it's some hour and a half north of Bath, whatever it is in Maine there. But they came in and we were doing an American War of Independence game, and we had two seats and I was sitting in one and we had an open seat, and, you know, a guy and a gal, you know, from that group walked in and I was like, well, come sit down. And, you know, the game master's like, well, I only have the one seat. It's like, all right, well, I'll give up my seat. You take my seat and you take the other seat. And to me, it was more important to have the two of them playing in a historical miniature game with other seasoned players from that club than it was for me to have gameplay, because that's the whole point of the game days.
Yeah. Well, we've got to play. We've got to play our whole lives plenty of times.
Yeah. You know, if you do something on the side or whatever.
Yeah. If you can do something to share the hobby with somebody just because you're not getting to play a game, you know, I mean, it's, you're really accomplishing more.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, I love to see the kids playing.
I mean, it's the classic pay it forward, right? I mean, it's,
yeah,
I've done good stuff and I've had people compliment me on it, and it's hard for me to accept compliments, but I'm always saying like, hey, you know, I'm just doing what other people have done for me, you know, and you see kids these days and all they play is video games. It's like, well, why don't you play a tabletop game with them? Well, I don't do that. Well, then I wonder why they don't do that, you know? So
there you go. Yeah. You got to give them the opportunity to have some fun or they're not going to have it.
If listeners want to keep up to date with what you're working on, Gabriel, what's the best way for them to do that? Websites, social media, or
social media wise? I mean, obviously there's the Tabletop Titans on Facebook. I'm an active member in the Maine Wargamers HQ group, which is basically the Maine Historical Wargaming Association, tends to hang out on there. But Tabletop Titans on Facebook is the place to go. I am completely for people saying, hey, can you do something on this? Or people, if you have products that you want reviewed or you want in a game or you want, I mean, it's all like that interaction I was talking about. So that's a good place to interact socially. Obviously, the tabletoptitans.com website, that's where I just post up my hobby stuff. You know, I was in a little bit of a lull for a while there, but I'm kind of coming back and putting more stuff on. But same thing, if you drop me an email and say, hey, can you do an article on this, or do you have any suggestions for that? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I interact with and I thrive on. So it kind of helps me go, oh, yeah, this is how we could do that, or maybe try this, or those kinds of things. So got some stuff on Google Plus, but there's not a lot of interest that I'm seeing out there. It tends to be more on the Facebook side, for at least for the miniature wargaming.
It's funny because Google Plus, I'm told, is very popular for board gamers. So there's a lot of game designers and so forth who do well on Google Plus. But I gave up on it long ago just because, it's a dead zone.
It's an outlet. I mean, the way I look at it is that the Facebook is about the personal interactions that are going on, whereas to me, Google Plus is more about the content category that you're talking about. So I love going to Google Plus for things that are like space exploration or Scientific America or just stuff where I'm more interested about the topic that's being talked about. Whereas I think for me, Facebook tends to be more about, oh, you know, Mike is doing, like Mike was talking to me about doing the warlords in China kind of thing. So the topic is the warlords in China, but it's from the context of Mike Payne. And I think it's just that idea, you know, that Facebook's about collecting people. Whereas Google Plus is about making connections. And so I don't know, maybe that's just my own personal paradigm, but that's just the way I think about them. But I do post to both just in case, on the odd chance that somebody, I hook even one person out on Google Plus who wants to be a part of it. There is an RSS feed on the tabletoptitans.com site, which I do update the XML file for that. So, you know, like I said, it's just more drop me an email, post something on Tabletop Titans, I mean, whatever it is. And I even used to do a yearly giveaway for a couple of years where people would just send in ideas for something and I would draw one of those names at random. And whatever the idea was that they sent in, I would send them a miniature of whatever it was. So I've done buildings or bridges or I just did my first green sculpt here not too long ago.
I saw that.
Yeah, because I'd never done it before. And here I'm.
Well, I want to do that too. You know?
Yeah, and it's not hard. I mean, at least it wasn't for me. But then,
I want to give it a try.
Yeah. Well, and then what it's that led to was, well, how do I get this cast into actual figures? So talking right. with some of the local casters in the area. And then of course the natural idea of, well, I'll just 3D scan it and have it printed out with like a shapeways.com or something. And then I stumbled on to, you know, the photo stitching where you take a bunch of pictures of the image from different angles, you load that into a photo editor, it'll actually make a 3D render based on those images. And then you can import that into a 3D program like Blender, which is what I have, or whatever, and, you know, and then upload it to Shapeways and print your own miniatures. Now, I never would have known of that, thought to do it, you know, had an inkling to do it, but it was just that chain of exploration that kind of took me that way. And here I'm learning all this great technology stuff as well as stuff about the hobby.
Well, there's a tutorial I'd like to see on Tabletop Titans, how to do that.
Yeah, like I say, when I
take me through the steps,
getting it figured out here, I'll definitely end up doing something at some point. So,
yeah, I'd like to give that a shot myself.
We will have links to your social media and your websites and everything in the show notes. And I'd like to move on to our next segment, which is one of my favorites. It's our mailbag, where listeners get to write in and send feedback and ideas and so forth. And actually, a previous guest had got in touch with me via Facebook, Adam Carrier, who I know is, I believe, acquainted with both of you.
Yeah, Adam was a co-host with us recently.
He wrote in to say, quote, "I gamed with Peter Lowett recently. He mentioned how much he enjoyed the podcast discussing the event." And he's referring to episode 171, where we talked about the Fort Devens Game Day 2016 event.
Oh, yeah.
So I appreciated Adam getting in touch with me, and I'm glad that Peter enjoyed the podcast episode.
Peter's a great guy.
Well, I just think it's nice when listeners are able to take the time to get in touch, because a lot of the time, whether you're a game designer or you're running a war game or you're doing a podcast or whatever, you kind of in a vacuum and you like that feedback. And it doesn't have to all be, "Yo, you're wonderful." Sometimes the best is, "Oh, did you realize such and such? Or you could improve on this." And as long as it's conveyed in a constructive way, you can then make right. that change and make the enhancement so that it ends up being better for everyone. So you provide that better user experience. So it's really nice to get that kind of stuff. And then we just have a few announcements for listeners. So there's one that I've been harping on for a while because I want to make sure people really get a chance to hear it and understand it, because it sounds bad, but it's not. And so what it is this.
That's a good way to get into it.
Well, I mean, it's as soon as I start, you're going to be like, "Wait, that does sound bad," because it does.
It can only get better, right?
So when people listen to the show, not always, but often people will listen through like an iTunes, or they listen on, you know, their mobile device, they have an app for it or something, and the episodes go through our website and then they get sent out into the universe through like an RSS feed, and it shows up everywhere. But unfortunately, a negative from being around so long, because we are the longest running tabletop wargaming podcast on the planet, there's a lot of stuff. So that pipeline, that feed is clogged, and we hit maximum. So there's no way for new stuff to get out to people. So what had to happen is, instead of everything from the beginning of time to now being in that feed, clogging that pipe, I had to say, "Okay, do you know what? Everything's not going to be in there." So instead of people getting all this stuff, I said, "Okay, so what we're going to do is we're cutting back so that only," and I say only, but really I think it's a lot, "the three most recent years of podcast episodes will automatically appear in that feed. They appear in your podcast app. They appear if you go on iTunes or whatever. Anything older than that didn't get thrown in the trash. It's still around. You can go to the website. You can listen to it by going there and finding the older stuff. But that's kind of clunky, right? No one wants to do that. If there's something relevant gets mentioned in a new episode, and we say, "Hey, in episode 48, which we would never do because by then it should be updated, but in episode 48, you can listen to blah, blah, blah. And it's this one, and we'd have a link in the show notes. But what's going to happen to kind of make up for this is we have our, I don't know why I like to refer to him as like a show notes monkey. For some reason, it makes me laugh, but it's kind of insulting, but it is. But I mean it in the best way possible, because
it doesn't sound like you do.
No, again, it sounds terrible. But our audio technician in our show notes scribe, I think that's his official title that he asked for, Joshua Shoebridge, who lives down under in Australia, he and he may not know this yet, but he should because I've been saying it for a while. He's going to take an entire year's worth of episodes and put them together into a super episode. So you'll have all like 25 episodes in one single episode download with that. Will then be available. You can download it as like a zip file or whatever and get it. And it should also then end up going into the feed. And you would think a year's worth of content would still be too big, but because it's released as one episode, it doesn't matter. And so it should be okay. So he's going to be working on that throughout 2017 and compiling it and everything. So although you won't be able to automatically get, you know, everything, you'll have 3 years. That's like, what is it? 75 episodes. Or so. That's a lot. Each episode's like an hour. That's 75 hours of your life. And new stuff comes out all the time. There's that. So it sounds bad, right? I'm giving you less. We're giving you less. But we're really not, because the stuff's there. So you can find it if you want it, and we're going to make it available to people. Just
you're economizing.
We're trying to improve. It's an update, as Microsoft would say. It's an enhancement.
Don't say that.
I'm like, oh no, it's Microsoft Tuesday. There's a new. Thankfully, that's only at work because at home I'm a Mac guy. So, but it's a legit, like, things are broken. We need to fix it. And what are we gonna do? So it's this, or it's like spend like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to try to find something.
Right. I'm
and
I don't have thousands that. And thousands. I'm totally and thousands against of spending money.
If we have to,
well, you're doing the iterative process. You're learning.
We're trying, and. Speaking of money, the show is kept afloat, partly from me, but not really because I have no money. But really, it's kept afloat. And it's true. I don't. I got a kid. Where's my money goes to the kid. I have no money. It's something I'm learning. But the show is kept afloat in two ways. So first of all, at the beginning of the episode, everyone heard in the pre-roll credits, and you'll hear at the end at the post-roll credits as well, that the MHWA, Maine Historical Wargamers Association, they sponsor the show very generously. Money comes in and helps keep us afloat, which is great. But then the other part of it is that people like you who listen to the show also help out. And you do that by becoming members and backers on Patreon. So we are $22 away from our next Patreon goal, and reaching this goal is actually very important, because in this episode, we've been talking a lot about going to events and doing things in person, and reaching the goal will allow us to get all sorts of equipment that is needed so that we can record with more than one person in person. It's nice because right now, like, I'm in Massachusetts and Gabriel, you're up in New Hampshire, and Mike, you're in New Hampshire. We're all different places. And like, if we were literally next door, I'd have to be like, okay, go on your computer and sit in your house somewhere so we can talk instead of being like, let's sit around a table, because that's dumb, right? It's stupid. It is. It shouldn't be that difficult to do it in person, but it costs money to get the equipment one needs. And yeah, so $22 away from reaching that goal is holding us back. So if people are willing and able to support the show on Patreon, that'd be great. You go to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon, and for as little as $1 a month, it's not going to break the bank. It, maybe one less cup of coffee a month, I don't know. But for as little as $1 a month, you can become a backer. You'll get episodes before everyone else. You get behind the scenes content. And then we have other backer levels. So I have two favorites here that I really like to promote. So one of them is something where you get something physical from me. You will get a Wargaming Recon postcard, has the nice little brand and logo on it. And then on the back, I write like a note to you. And nowadays, we don't get fun stuff in the mail. Like, I get bills and things I don't want. I don't get anything good. Like, we don't send letters. We don't do stuff like that, right? So if you back the show for $9 a month, every month that you back the show, I'll send you a postcard. I talk about things that are going on, or events I'm going to go to, or new games I discovered, just fun kind of stuff. And then the other, and this is one that I'm super, super excited about because I ran out. And so I had to get more made, and they're new designs. So Christopher Rett, who also goes to Huzzah, I believe he's an MHWA member, and he's located in Massachusetts. I don't know why I always thought he was in New Hampshire, but he's not. He has made new custom wooden dice for the show. So I have here these new dice, and there's two new designs. So one of them has a little hex with a number 17 in it, and one says 2017 on it. It says the name of the show. It has some hexagons in it. These are only for 2017. You can get them by being a backer. $18 a month will get you a set of six of them. So if you want multiple sets of six, just keep backing, and every month I'll send you another set of six. It'll be half of each design, so you get those in the mail. I'll send them out, and I'll do that for as long as people want them. And then 2018 comes, we'll have a new design. So it's going to be different. So what do they say about Pokemon? You got to get them all, got to collect them all. So $18 a month and you help the show. You get dice. These dice are awesome. I love these dice. I wish I didn't have to send them out because I just kind of want to keep them all for myself because they're really cool. The other day I got in the mail. I got a thing. I did an unboxing video, which I haven't released yet. And my little one helped me with it, which was it's funny. So when I get it out, but I opened it and I got this bag and it's all these dice in it. I'm like, ooh, let me look at all the dice and everything. And through some communication errors, some of the designs weren't correct. So I was like, oh, I'll send you back the ones that aren't correct. If you want, Crystal, what do you want me to do? And he's like, keep them, just keep them. And I'll make new ones and I'll send them to you. I'm like, oh, awesome. So I'm getting the correct ones, but now I actually have a set of dice. Cause I tell you, I'm always looking for dice. I think I have a bunch and then I don't know where they are. I lost them or I don't know. They end up, who knows where they go? Like they get eaten by the dust bunnies or something.
You can't have too many anyway.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you use a D6 for like everything in life. Really? Like Mike, I know your game's D10 cause your game's a little weird that way.
I use six-sided in the game too. That's just the stuff that I use them for.
But like most
games you roll them.
Are D6s and I never get enough D6s and these are they're nice. Locally made, the handcrafted, laser etched, helping the show, helping small business, all wonderful things.
They gave them out to Game Masters last year at Huzzah. I thought those were kind of cool.
Yeah, every Game Master I think got one dice. He's doing new stuff for 2017 for Huzzah. So people can get that. And I want to thank some of our Patreon backers. So I want to thank Patrick, Chris Parker from dayofbattlegames.com, Kyle from Vermont. And I just want to remind everyone, wargamingrecon.com/Patreon is where to go if you wish to back the show, if you're so able to. I know not everyone can. There's other ways to support the show. You can spread the word. You can interact, send feedback, and all sorts of stuff, or just keep on listening. The show will always be free. I'm never going to be like, hey, you need to pay to get the show because I think that's stupid. If you want to and you want to send a little money, think of it like a tip, you can do that. And then we have more cool episodes coming up in 2017, a lot of episodes actually. And if you want to find out what's going to be happening in these episodes, you go to the episode guide. There'll be a link in the show notes, but it's wargamingrecon.com/episode guide. So if you go there, you'll happen to learn that the next episode, episode 175, comes out on January 30th. And that episode is going to have another local fella on it. Timothy Colonna is going to be talking about his game, Trilaterum Games. It's a 15mm sci-fi company-based game, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. And be talking about that. And then later on in the year, we're going to be reviewing Cigar Box Battle Mats. And of course, there'll be the live episode from Huzzah and all that kind of stuff. But it's all on the episode guide. And in case people forgot, the link to the show notes is wargamingrecon.com/WR174. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR174. It never looks like a lot of, you know, announcements and stuff when I have it written down in my little outline. And then like 10 minutes go by, I'm like, I just did all the announcements. And I think it's like 2 minutes of announcements at most, because who wants to listen to 10 minutes of announcements? But there's a lot.
You deliver it well.
Why? Thank you, sir. That's very kind of you to say. I mean, I look at it and my eyes glaze over. I'm like, oh, I got to tell them this and this and this because it's important. And I cut it down as much as I can. And then I'm like, oh, God, look at all these announcements I got to give them. So I try to spread them out, but...
Well, I try to interrupt so we can stretch it out and make it last even longer.
And that's why the people like you. I truly believe, Mike, that you are their favorite. I think they're like, Jonathan, we're done with him, Mike. That's
No. Mike's like a mascot, you know? He's like that guy you want to walk over and no disrespect, but just like rub his head for good luck or something.
Don't be doing that now.
Whenever you see Mike Payne, you got to go somewhere near him just to get some of that man.
I'll let the little ones grab my beard. That's it.
Maybe there should be like a sign that just kind of discreetly hidden near the hang high table that says like for like a dice re-roll, just like rub my beard.
Like people, that's for 5 years and like, under. That's it.
And then they like yeah, and then they get a free dice. I don't know. Think about it.
I don't think I'll be thinking about that long.
Well. Mike, I want to thank you for being co-host again for this episode. And Gabriel, yeah, I am so delighted that you joined us this time.
Good talking to you, Gabriel.
It's fascinating. Yeah, and if I could just say one last shout out there for Maine Historical Wargaming Association. If you're anywhere near, you know, Bath, Maine, I drive up. It's like an hour and 45 minutes one way for me, but it's completely worth it. They do game days. They do Huzzah Con. If you've never been to a con or to Huzzah Con, I'm telling you, experience at Historic Con. This is definitely a nice family-friendly con worth doing. And like I said, we have a cadets program. We're looking for, you know, fresh young players. So please come and enjoy.
And the name just came to me of the guy who I've been talking to. So I want to give him a shout out, Gunnar Sorum. He, I believe, is hoping to be at Huzzah 2017. So it should be nice. And Gunnar, if you listen to this episode, I don't know if you listen to the show, but if you do and you see me, please say hi, because I always suggest people come up and say hi if they see me. I don't know what any of you look like, but you probably know what I look like because I put it out there. So say hi and get into some games. And just thank you again, Gabriel. It was a lot of fun having you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Let me put a plug in for Gordon's Con up there at the Adler Con, one day Con up there in Manchester. You can get those links on the Barbarians.
Do you remember when that is? Because I do not. It's February.
Off the top of my head. It's like the 24th or something like that.
Okay.
You know, and
we'll go with that.
Right here, my cat.
Yeah, and then Total Con's coming up after that. We're all going to be down there.
Oh, 20th.
20th of January.
Yep. 20th? Okay. Oh, you would have missed
28.
28. Okay.
Yeah, 28 January.
I'll be there.
In Manchester.
I'll be there.
And then you're going to be at Total Con, Mike, and I'll be there. And
absolutely. Yeah, that'll be a blast.
Do you make it to Total Con?
I don't. Sometimes it's really hit or miss. I mean, I try to make Huzzah one of my definites, but it's just kind of hit or miss. Like, I went down to Devon's just on a whim. So,
yeah, I'm glad you
made it. Yeah, if it's something where people, like I said, have ideas about stuff or want to talk about stuff, or like, hey, we really want to do this, then I'll probably be coerced into going someplace. But I don't usually go to Total Con.
I think you should give it a try. New location in the Best Western in Marlboro, Mass. So it should be really nice there. A brand new whole thing that they're doing. Closer, I think, for a lot of you guys up north.
Closer for me.
Down where I'm lamenting that it's not in Mansfield anymore, because that was like a 10-minute drive for me.
Yeah.
But if the weather's good, you should make a trip on the Saturday afternoon, be running Bolt Action with Adrian, and then you can put the bug in his ear. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Just saying. So, well, anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I remind you that, yes, you can get the show notes, and they have links to all the stuff that we talked about and to the websites and all the wonderful things that Gabriel has done and stuff Mike is working on for Hing Hai and the Barbarians and everything. And just, you got to remember this one thing, okay? No matter how busy you are in your life, no matter what's going on, no matter how much snow you have going, I haven't looked out the window, but I'm sure I got a pile of it to shovel. You know, you have to. You gotta. You need to. Keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other great shows on the network.
This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew, who helped give the show its name. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit
wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.